Welcome to episode 141 of Your Kids Next Read podcast, in which we talk about books and reading for kids of all ages. I'm Alison Tate, author of middle grade adventure series, The Mapmaker Chronicles, The Atabane Cipher, The Maven and Reeve mystery series, and my new middle grade novel, The First Summer of Callie McGee. Probably my latest really now, not rather than new, but still feels new to me. I'm here with my co-host, the indispensable Megan Daly, teacher librarian at Children's Books Daily, although now megandaly.com.au, author of Raising Readers and The Beehive, and editor of Teacher Teacher. Megan and I, along with our good friend, author Alison Rushby, are founders of the Your Kids Next Read community on Facebook. Search for Your Kids Next Read there to join us. So, what's occurring in the not quite launch of Megan this week?
Ah, yes, not quite launch. Well, I have been, you know, it's still been holidays in the previous week, just up here in Queensland, school holidays. So the Beekeeper and I did a local vacation care bee talk. We've done quite a few talks in childcare centres and primary schools about bees. He's done quite a few and I've come along because I am, of course, learning the trade, so to speak, because I am going to have a book about bees of my very own. So we did a talk at our local vacation care. They asked us to come along. I talked about native Australian bees and the beekeeper talked about European honeybees. It was so much fun. They had organised a whole bee day. It was like a bee extravaganza and it was so cute. They had like a little sign up saying, you know, Beekeeper Murray is coming to vacation care. It was like he was a celebrity. He was so touched and it was very exciting and it was very cute. They had beeswax wraps that they were making. They made honey joys, which are those delicious cornflakey honey things.
I haven't had one of those for years.
Oh, years, so good. They had been painting bee wings and making headbands. It was an epic bee-focused day at vacation care. Vacation care is always prep to grade six, so it was a really nice mix of different ages. We split into groups and I talked about Australian native bees and all of the different varieties. Did you know there's over 2,000 varieties of Australian native bees in Australia, Alison?
I did not know that, but now I do.
And the beekeeper talked about European honeybees and then we swapped over and we had lots of fun. We did honey tastings and we also had live bees. We had a safe container of European honeybees. He has a display hive and I have a hive now of display stingless bees, the Tetragonia carbonaria variety of Australian native bee. And they're doing a beautiful job in this display hive of starting their brood cells and their pollen pots and their honey pots. So it was really exciting. The kids thought that was fantastic to see real life bees. And I want to give a huge shout out to Hannah, Kayla and Emily from that vacation care, that particular vacation care. They were excited. We were excited. It went really well and it was just a really lovely thing to do. So it was super, super fun to do in the lead up to the launch of the Beehive. And of course, I was able to show them a copy of the Beehive. So that was exciting as well.
Very exciting. Well, I'm a little bit excited too. Book Boy is due back from overseas this week. So I'm So I'm looking forward to catching up with him soon, you know, to hear all about it or as much as he's willing to share with his mum. Probably I'll get like, yeah, it was great. That'll be it. I'm also nearing the end of the 5,000-word creative challenge in my Write with Alison Tate online writing group. Happy to report that I have written about, I don't know, at least three times, if not more, that many words this month. So that's pretty exciting. Accountability and group motivation is a huge driver for getting started. And once you're there, you just keep going. So it works. It works for me as the person who creates the challenge as much as it does for everyone who actually, you know, does the challenge, so to speak.
It's finally Hive Day. From celebrated teacher, librarian and author Megan Daly and CBCA shortlisted illustrator Max Hamilton comes The Beehive, the latest addition to the Nature Storybook series from Walker Books. This engaging picture book invites young readers into the world of Australia's native bees. Find out more at megandaly.com.au.
All right, speaking of keeping on going, the book mail keeps on going. What have you got for us this week?
Look, my first one is just divine. It is called Dazzle Hands.
Of course it is.
I know. Dazzle Hands. It is by, I just had to say that again, Dazzle Hands by Sasha Cotter, illustrated by Josh Morgan. Let me read you the blurb. All farmer wants is for pig to oink, just like a good pig should. But pig has other ideas. Outlandish, rhyming, dancing, grooving, totally dazzling ideas, to be precise. And it's driving farmer around the bend. Now, this one was sent to me by a lovely school librarian in New Zealand who knew enough about me to know that this book just practically screams Megan Daly. And it does. It's got an incredibly fabulous pink cover. It's got brilliant graphic design and it is just dazzling. I met some fantastic school library staff when I visited New Zealand last year to speak at the school library conference. And I also discovered that there was a whole area of New Zealand publishing, which I didn't seem to have access to. It astonishes me that we're so close to New Zealand and we don't have more access to books across the ditch. Mm. And I did bring quite a lot of books home from New Zealand, but this one was sent to me and I am just so grateful this one was sent to me. It's published in both English and Maori. It is incredibly beautiful, very dazzling. It's a total joy to read aloud and act out with a class of small humans who love a bit of dazzle hand action. And Pig is just a fabulous character. So if you are in New Zealand, I highly recommend it. You can also buy it on Amazon if you live in Australia. And really good one to look out for if you love pink, glitter, dazzle hand action, you know, really, and a good rhyming text. Really enjoyed that one.
How could you go wrong, right?
How could you go wrong? My second one is Night Watch, and it's by Jody Turing and illustrated by Tanya Harricks. Now, this one is a distinctly Australian bedtime story and one that I will be gifting to a member of our family who's had a baby recently and probably needs a bit of a bedtime story in their life. I'll read you the blurb. Sunset beckons, moon appears and tawny frogmouth stirs. She begins her nightly flight, watching over all the animals nestled down to sleep in the burrows and branches of the beautiful Australian bush. Australia's native tawny frogmouths are often mistaken for owls. They are, like owls, they are nocturnal. Now, this is a really beautiful bedtime story and it follows the journey of tawny frogmouths as they soar through the skies and through the night, keeping watch over native fauna as they settle in for their safe slumber. I love tawny frogmouths and it's the beekeeper and I often go for a walk at night after our own small children are slumbering. And because he spends so much time in the bush at night, you need to move bees at night. So a lot of his work is done in the middle of the night in the Australian bush. He's really, really good at spotting tawny frogmouths and other nocturnal creatures. And I have seen so many, he's been able to spotlight with, you know, we always take a torch like every good suburban walker does, nighttime walker does. And we've spotted lots and lots of tawny frogmouths. And I just loved the idea of this book of them keeping watch over all of the other animals as they sleep. So I just thought it was such a beautiful Australian bedtime story for a very young audience.
Sounds divine. Mm. I didn't get that one. Now I'm sad.
No, you should be.
Maybe it'll arrive. You never know. I'm going to talk about another picture book, which is, you know, I would put it in the gentle picture book category, although it is a bit more raucous than Night Watch. It's called Birdsong by the Billabong by Maura Finn and Kate James. And it's the third installment in the popular Billabong series. The text is rhyming and builds. So think Partridge in a Pear Tree, where each sort of verse builds on the next, each line builds on the next. I'll just read you the back. A warbling magpie, a choir of cockatoos, a band of blue fairy wrens. What else might you find on a trip to the Billabong? From the creators of the best-selling By the Billabong and Babies at the Billabong comes this cheerful dance through the sunny Australian landscape. But wait, is that a storm? It's a lot of fun. There are some absolutely beautiful birds, you know, all through it, cockatoos. We've got, you know, all sorts of, you know, We've got Christmas beetles humming. We've got purple fan flowers. We've got red and green king parrots. Like, it's all there. And they are really, really lovely. And I really like Kate James's illustrations.
I do too. Yeah.
So she just does such a lovely job. And each of the books I've seen by her has been, you know, subtly different, but always hers. And, you know, it's a winner for me. I think it's a lovely, lovely book. Now, the second one I've got for you is actually probably, well, it's definitely not a picture book. It's a great choice, I think, for a seven-year-old who's looking for more words and a bit more story, and also for older reluctant readers, which is a pretty nice sort of sweet spot to be sitting in. It's called Knights and Bikes, Rebel Bicycle Club, like I was in with the title, by Gabriel Kent, illustrated by Luke Newell. And it was the title that attracted me off this, you know, of the pile of book mail that I have here. Rebel Bicycle Club got me in. And then I discovered it was actually number three in a series, with number four coming in March. So it's in as for readers 7 to 12. It's illustrated, but it looks cool. It's more a novel than the sort of junior chapter book feel, like the sort of junior fiction feel. There's a lot of white space and typography, but it's still a kind of high-paced action adventure, mystery, kids on bikes, maps, bad guys, which is why I say it could be a great choice for a seven-year-old who wants, you know, more words, or for, you know, sort of a slight, you know, an older reluctant reader. I'll just read you the back. Welcome back to the sleepy island of Penfersey. Adventure awaits Demelza and her best friend in the whole world, Nessa, when an unexpected guest arrives at their door. The stakes have never been higher when the duo must solve a new mystery to save their friend, fending off bullies, ghosts, and more. Packed with laughter, heart, action, and award-winning illustrations, you are invited to return to Penfersey Island with Nessa and Demelza to celebrate the greatest adventurers of all time. So nice work to the UK creative team of Gabriel Kent and Luke Newell.
From acclaimed author Alison Rushby comes the Miss Penny Dreadful Junior Fiction Series for readers 7+, illustrated by Bronte Rose Mirando. It is 1872, and Penny has an inquiring mind and some magical mysteries to solve as she adventures alongside her famous authoress aunt. Find out more at alisonrushby.com.
Speaking of UK creatives, it is time, Megan Daly, for our bingo question of the week. And this week, we are not bingoing. We are, in fact, going to be spending 10 minutes with the wonderful Sheena Dempsey. Sheena Dempsey is a children's book author and illustrator from Cork, Ireland. She has illustrated more than 30 books for children. But today, we are going to chat about her first graphic novel, Pablo and Splash. And I hope you enjoy the interview. Welcome to Your Kids Next Read podcast, Sheena Dempsey. It is such a thrill to have you here all the way from the other side of the world, where it is raining and cold, and making me feel cooler just thinking about it, really.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Okay, so let's just start by talking about your illustration work, because you have illustrated more than 30 books for children. How did you start out with that? Like, what's drawn you to that sort of visual literacy end of town?
I feel like I was a bit of a kind of late starter in that it took me quite a long time for the kind of penny to drop that it was particularly illustration that I was kind of destined for, I suppose. I did study fine art for undergrad, but I kind of was slogging through it a bit. Like, it wasn't really my kind of cup of tea exactly. So it took me like kind of more than the 4 years to get the degree kind of thing. And then I did, and I was kind of, I was actually waiting tables and wondering what to do, like, with my life a little bit. But I'd started collecting kind of children's picture books, and that my mind was kind of being blown by the level and the kind of, I was just so engaged in that particular kind of illustration at that point. Like, I was really, my collection was ever growing, and I was really just drawn to that kind of world. And I was like, wow, like, if I could kind of work in this world, I think this is where I belong, you know. So that's kind of how it all happened. And then I went when I was 27, which is, I mean, I think it's pretty late, but like, I moved to London then to study a master's in illustration kind of thing. I think as well, because there weren't degree courses for illustration in Ireland at the time. And I think if there had been, I would have maybe been more aware. And it just, yeah, it wasn't as much of a thing as it is now in Ireland, you know.
So how did you do your first book? Like, how did that happen? How did you become the illustrator of the first book that you illustrated?
I was very lucky because I made my first book on my master's course. And it was part of, it was like a course project. And it was quite kind of a dark idea. It was about a little girl who is kind of jealous of the attention that her baby brother like steals from their mom kind of thing. And she just fantasizes about different ways to like get rid of the baby. And before I realized that there were such things as like, you know, lawsuits, I was like, you know, I had the girl like, you know, flushing the baby down the loo and this kind of thing. It was very, very dark. But I sent it to the slush pile of Walker Books, which was basically just an email that I had. And very, very luckily, this lovely woman who's called Louise Parra, I think she's now passed, unfortunately, but she pulled my idea from the slush pile, and I ended up doing two books with Walker Books. I mean, we had to change a lot of the ideas because they were just too dark for that market, for the age group. But yeah, that's how Bye Bye Baby Brother came about, my first book.
Fantastic. And now you've created your first graphic novel, which is called Pablo and Splash, Time Traveling Penguins. What made you step into that end of the, like, what made you step into that world and that word, you know, that all sort of like that marrying of words and pictures in that particular way?
How it actually started was at the beginning of the first lockdown. I've been talking about wanting to kind of make comics because I love reading them. And I have been talking about it a lot. And I finally was like, it felt like a good time to start making a comic because I'm going to have extra time in my hands. So I decided just to start making a diary comic called, a diary web comic called Isolation Penguin. And quite randomly, I picked the penguin as the animal to represent me because they were kind of big, because they were easy to draw. I could quickly fire off the comic within a couple of hours rather than using humans where it's lots of fingers and anatomy to get right and stuff. So actually, it's quite happenstance that I chose penguin as the animal kind of thing, which, I mean, thank God I didn't choose, you know, giraffes or something because I don't think I'd have the theories that I have now, but... I started putting these little funny drawings online and kind of I noticed that more and more people were engaging than before and kind of I really enjoyed making them. So I was making them every few days kind of thing. So I think I made in total maybe 50 episodes. And at some point I was like, I think this would really work for the children's market. Like, I mean, I think I should change it for the children's market. I should kind of turn it into something that would work for the children's market, like a whole graphic novel, because I felt that there was a gap that wasn't being fulfilled within the British kind of, we were slow to catch up with. I think there aren't a lot of makers in the UK, of graphic novels. So I felt there was a gap that I could kind of try and slot myself into. And I developed this series idea over a period of time and very luckily Bloomsbury kind of picked it up. I actually, yeah, it was quite mad. It had never happened to me before, but I had... Like I changed agents to Sally Ann Sweeney. She's a brilliant, brilliant woman. She's also Irish, but she pitched the series for us. And she was kind of like, you know, wait the summer. It will take a while kind of thing. And within a week we had kind of seven publishers bidding on her. So I was quite like shocked, but delighted obviously. Yeah.
That's amazing. It's an interesting thing because you know, the characters, Pablo and Splash, as you said, you kind of developed them from this sort of penguin webcomic series that you created. But where did you actually start with creating the story, the narrative for this sort of series that you created? Because it's one thing to do a webcomic and it's quite another to do an entire graphic novel that, you know, then also is, you know, obviously going to potentially, I'm assuming, jump off into other adventures as well. So you have your characters, but where did you then begin with, okay, I'm going to turn them into time traveling penguins as opposed to penguins who just do their thing in the Antarctic or the Arctic or wherever they are?
Yeah, exactly. The webcomic was very kind of a domestic setting because we were in lockdown and how was I going to kind of turn it into something that works for children? Actually, what prompted me to actually turn it into something for children was that a publisher that I was working with asked me if I could kind of turn it into something for children, but not change it too much. And I was like, how do I do that? Because I feel like it does need to be changed quite a lot for it to work for children. So it was just a process of kind of brainstorming and like, okay, I think they live in Antarctica, but I want to bring them on an adventure. It's kind of thinking, you know, how do I get them out of Antarctica? It was a process of kind of brainstorming. And I also joined a critique group. So my critique group kind of, you know, I was kind of spitballing ideas and like they were amazing. And like, I just, as a like bit by bit, I kind of built a kind of world. And like, even when I, with my new agent, I sent the idea to my agent and it had had on flash, but they were kind of, there were all these different kind of facets to the scientist, you know, science. Like there was teleportation and there was time travel. So it's a bit more complex.
Yeah.
And she was like, okay, to streamline it down. And then immediately I was like, oh yeah, like if it's time traveling penguins, it's immediately a much better hook than it is if it's kind of just like, what is it then? Otherwise, you know, it was more, it just felt a lot more kind of sharp and like it worked a lot better once it was kind of time traveling penguins. I felt like that was, okay, this works now, you know?
Yeah. So it's like distill until you get to the very essence of what it actually is. And, you know, I do love the fact that some of that process actually plays out in the opening chapters of this story, because there's this whole thing of like, well, how are we going to go on holidays because we're here and it's too far to do this and it's too hard to do that and we can't swim and we can't do. And I actually, yeah, I love that, because hearing you talk about it, like I can almost see you going, well, like, how am I going to make them get from A to B because they can't do all these things, you know, we can't fly. This is terrible. Yeah. So I love that. I love the, you know, watching that process sort of unfold. So, you know, when you illustrate, you kind of present it with the words and you weave your magic and then a second, you know, narrative into the pictures. As the person in charge of both, in this instance with your graphic novel, I know that you had the process in that sense that you had the webcomics, so you had your penguins, etc. But did the, like with the story, did the imagery come first? Could you see what they were doing? Or, you know, was it the kind of words? Did you have the some of the scenes play out in dialogue for you and then you sort of like created the imagery to go with it? Or is it all at the same time as part of your process?
That's a good question. I'm trying to kind of think back. I mean,
it was a long question. I remember you can take your time to think.
Yeah. I remember in one of the meetings that we had when we were kind of bringing it around, like someone said, the first publisher actually was like, we'd like to see this in full color. And I immediately was like, and I had been imagining it in kind of two-tone because I felt the color would be too challenging to embark upon for such a long project. And I immediately saw all the world in full color. Like, it was just like, I was like, oh my God, that would be amazing. Like, I could just picture it so much better once it was in color in my mind. But like, I mean, I guess how I made it was that I wrote an outline. So I kind of had a pretty good idea of where it was going. And then when I started working with the commissioning editor, Zoe, I developed the outline. So it was more, developed basically. And I guess all the time you're kind of imagining how things will look and then you're ready to jump in. And like, I think with graphic novels, you have to be allowed to kind of like be quite improvisational.
Yeah.
Because like, if you can't really, as the kind of both writer and illustrator, you can't really separate the two processes, I don't think. So basically I was allowed to kind of go and be quite free to, you know, like using our outline that we've made together or whatever, I was free to really kind of improvise from page to page. And that was by drawing and writing at the same time in rough form. Like, yeah. So I would try and hit about 8 or 10 pages a day, which is quite a lot, but I didn't always hit them kind of thing. So yeah, it's quite an intense schedule when you're making the, because you want to leave as much time as you can for the color art.
Yes.
Which is always going to take longer. So yeah, I would try to be as kind of efficient as I could at that point. Yeah.
But, because you're having to think also about that balance too, aren't you? Like, even as you're roughing out, you're having to think about that balance of what aspects of the story is the image, is the picture carrying, and what are the few words that I'm going to put into this speech bubble going to do to drive this narrative forward as well. Like, it's a balance. Like, I'm deeply impressed by people who can do this, because I don't, I'm not really a particularly visual thinker. So the concept of having to do these two things at the same time, just it hurts my head. So I'm very impressed. Well, that's all I can say, Shana. Well done.
Thank you. It is a process of like distilling, and I think that you're trying to hit a joke on every page as well. There's loads of things to consider. So I do find it really challenging, but it's really rewarding as well. Like, it's really fun.
Fantastic. So I love the fact that the book is divided into chapters. It feels like a grown-up book, even though it's obviously aimed at a younger reader. It's got a really, it's heavy as well with the graphic novel, with the paper and the covers, and there's quite a lot of pages. It's a heavy book. It's got the chapters in it, but, you know, overall, like, the humor is great. I love this, a couple of extremely funny little bits and pieces in there. And I really love the overall sort of that blue yellow color palette of the Pablo, where Pablo and Splash are talking to each other. You get that real, you know where you are. The dialogue is there, you know, in those colors. And then you've got the facts and the how to draw in the back. And how much of that sort of stuff were you deciding before you began? Like, did you know it was going to be chapters? Did you know that there were going to be facts in the back? Did you like have that idea of the two colors for Pablo and Splash all the way through?
I definitely visualized each setting as having a different palette. And I was wondering how I would inject color into the Antarctic world. I think it works because we have pages where there are backgrounds with like backgrounds where we have just sort of plain panels. So that's an opportunity to inject color. And I always had them as chapters. I had written them as chapters from the beginning, I think. So yeah, it was all broken down, always broken down into chapters.
So it's like a design, kind of like you're thinking of the design of the project, you know, even as you're creating the project, which I think again is another challenge, which, you know, as a writer who writes middle grade novels, I'm not thinking about the design of the project. I'm just thinking about how can I get this many words as I go.
Yeah.
Do you have, my
designer, I have to give a shout out to my designer, Juliet Rushenthorn, who works at Bloomsbury, and she is incredible. So she was an ear to me throughout the process and like has an amazing eye. Like, so yeah, she's just fantastic.
Fantastic. The collaborative effect, you know, of it is amazing. Did you have an ideal reader in mind when you were writing the book? Like, did you have or were you just kind of writing for the amorphous child out there?
Yeah, good question, because I guess I had pictured it in the 5 to 8 category. Well, actually, no, I hadn't. I always find that I write too old, like, then like my jokes don't suit that very young kind of age group. So I had sort of, I'm always drawn to that 8, 9 kind of 10 age group. Even for events and stuff, I much prefer that kind of age group. And then like that was the thing with Bloomsbury, like they saw it as this age group bracket, whereas all the other publishers were thinking younger kind of thing. And I wasn't thinking that it was a younger series, because I think time travel is a tricky, you know, concept for a 5-year-old to grasp anyway, but I felt that it was definitely this kind of sweet spot for me, which is the 8 to 10 kind of age group.
Okay. And if you had to look at like what was the biggest challenge for you in creating a graphic novel, what would you say was the biggest challenge that faced you?
Actually delivering the artwork. I always underestimate. I've done like 30 books, and like still at the end, I'm in like tearing my hair out going like, oh, when will this be over? Because like, I just underestimate what it actually takes, you know, to ship kind of like the work, like to actually get it off, because I make a mistake, same mistake every time. I kind of almost finish every spread, and then I'm like done, and then I move on to the next thing, and I come back and I'm like, oh my gosh, this needs so much more work. So that was the biggest like challenge the last month with me, just going like, oh my gosh. So yeah.
All right, now I have to ask. I have to ask, how would you pronounce Splash's version of a holiday? Because there's a discussion in there about how it's not a holiday. It's a, what is it?
I'd say holiday. Like,
it's a holiday.
It's no ordinary like Antarctic local holiday. It's a holiday.
I love the way it was written. And so what's next for you? Are there going to be more Pablo and Splash time traveling adventures, or are you sort of working on other projects, or what happens now?
And we're going to the Ice Age next. So that's what I'm working on at the moment, is the final artwork for book 2.
I don't think Splash is going to be happy with the Ice Age.
I know. Yeah. So you'd rather go somewhere hot, I think, but it's the only way you can get Pablo to kind of go, I think. And then the third book season is going to ancient Rome. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. Right. So some research again.
Yeah. Big time. Yeah. I definitely have to research like each time period quite like vigorously because I like this. I'm not a history buff by any means. So this is just definitely the fun bits that appeal to me from history, like from historic periods. Yeah.
No boring bits in the history stuff. That's fabulous. All right. Well, look, it's been lovely chatting to you today, Sheena. I think Pablo and Splash is going to go great. I do love penguins and I love how graphic they are. So I think they're absolutely perfect for a graphic novel like this. Now, before we wrap up, I'm just going to ask you to recommend a book for our Your Kids Next Read audience, like something that you've read recently that you think, you know, needs a wider audience and that they would love.
I'm really enjoying, well, I'm always dipping in and out of the Phoebe and Her Unicorn series, which is by Dana Simpson, an American author, but I just think they're really clever and funny and just they make me laugh. And I also love the very kind of cartoony kind of drawing style. And I also have been loving Garlic and Vampire and Garlic and Wish series by Bree Paulson. These are both graphic novels, by the way. Mm-hmm. The illustrations in Garlic and the Vampire are like stunning. And it's just a very unusual kind of story in that like all the main characters are vegetables and they live in this kind of witch's garden. It's really just bizarre, but also just so appealing and wonderful. Yeah.
Sounds amazing. All right. Well, thank you so much, Sheena. Best of luck with Pablo and Splash. I hope it goes absolutely gangbusters for you. And thank you for spending approximately 10 minutes with Your Kids Next Read.
Thanks for having me.
So I hope you loved that, Megan, because absolutely. I loved the fact that this graphic novel grew out of a lockdown project. And I found the discussion about adapting it for kids and using color to lift that penguin monochrome, you know, reality really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what's not to love about also an accent?
Oh, absolutely. You can't go wrong. Cannot go wrong. Yes, I do tend to get a little distracted. Like I'm so busy kind of like tuning in to the lyrical discussion that I'm like, oh, wait a minute, it's my turn to ask a question. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So it is a great little graphic novel. And I think it will go incredibly well for her, to be perfectly honest. Now it's time for quick tips. And I am just going to give just sort of one little quick tip this week. We did setting up for a great reading year last week. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to add on with a quick tip for setting kids up for a great writing year. Now, we discussed the fact that Alison Rushby wrote some really great tips on idea hunting in the January newsletter post for paid subscribers, which you'll find at yourkidsnextread.substack.com, or I'll put a link in the show notes. Do have a 7-day free trial so you can have a good look around at it. But I just have the one tip that I would like to put out there, because I think that keeping an ideas journal, which is part of Alison's kind of go forward, is really, really essential. But for me, it comes down to just two things. People think that a journal has to be, you know, a diary. They think it has to be long. They think it has to be involved. They think it has to be work. When in actual fact, what it is tiny snippets. And what I say to kids is if they can think about one thing that makes them go, wow, or one thing that makes them ask why in a day, that's the only thing they have to write in the journal. Just the one thing, something that made them go, wow, or something that made them ask why, because that's where the story ideas are. Every single story, every single novel that I have ever written has started with that. And often for me, it's a why. Why would you do that? It's that kind of a question. Why would that have happened? And the why of anything, even as a freelance writer, I remember, you know, doing stories, and the why of everything is what drives me forward with writing is finding out, you know, you're like a little detective, whether you're 10 or whether you're, you know, shall we say a little bit older than that, like I am, it's all about sort of finding that why and then chasing it, because it's the spark for what is going to actually turn into a story. So, you know, if you have a young writer in your life, give them a special journal. give them a tiny notebook. It doesn't have to be expensive. It just needs to be some little thing that they can pop in their pocket. And if they have that with them, it's just about a matter of scribbling down. And if they do that, then there's always a story idea. And it's as simple as that. And that's what writers do. That's what authors do. We're still doing it. Even, all these years later, that's what we're doing. We are just training ourselves to spot ideas like when we see them. So that's my quick tip.
I love that. It's just so beautiful. One thing that makes you go, wow, or one thing that makes you ask why, and then chase that idea. That's such a great, simple, quick tip that I feel like you told me that years ago, but rehearing you say
I do repeat it because it's the
really
sort of thing.
Clever.
Because the reiteration of it too, sometimes you just have to remind, saying something to kids once is not, hello. Have we not all, been there? Saying something to kids once never gets it done, right?
I really like that. I feel like that's something I need to share with my young writers in my life that I work with at school. That's a great tip. I like that one a lot. Mine is a lot more practical, shall we say. My quick
that's
tip
good.
Is, as promised from last week's episode, I am talking about culling your home book collection. Now, as you all know, I have been moving. I am still in the process of moving. I feel like we've been moving for about 2.5 years, and I've taken the opportunity to cull my home book collection. Also, over the summer break, I didn't have to talk him into it. We both decided to watch the Swedish Death Cleaners series on Netflix because, we are packing all day and then we like to relax by watching a series about death cleaning. So we watched that over the summer break and I actually learned a lot from it. It was such a great series. I'd highly recommend it. There is a book about Swedish death cleaning as well. And occasionally when the beekeeper had enough of Swedish death cleaners, we would put on our old favourite, Vera. Who doesn't like to go to bed listening to, our pet?
I love Vera. I'm obsessed with Vera.
I've been obsessed
with Vera for years and years, and I'm desperately waiting for new Vera. There's no new Vera to be had.
Well, the beekeeper had never, ever watched Vera, so I am reliving Vera through the beekeeper's eyes, and he is quite enjoying it, so it's
excellent.
Been lovely. Anyway, back to Swedish death cleaning.
Back to that.
I have learned over my 20-something years as a school librarian a thing or two about culling books. It is actually a part of being a librarian, and a lot of people assume that librarians have homes full of books, but we are in fact in the business of rotating books and of sharing books, so we're very good at culling. I'm going to suggest a few things if you are also wanting to cull your home collection of books. First of all, categorize your books. Sort your books into categories. You can decide what those categories are. They may be genres, authors, themes, or age ranges. But you need to get a clear overview of all of your books, and they need to be in categories. I have done my own in age ranges to suit the ages of my 4 children and the beekeeper and I. Then from those categories, you make piles of keep, donate, and discard piles. Really consider the reasons that you're keeping the books, and remember that the books will deteriorate if they're not stored well. So they might as well be in the hands of another reader. When I am having my donate pile is usually split into about 5 other piles within the donate pile. I donate to, as I talked about last week on the podcast, I donate to various schools. I donate to the Pajama Foundation. I donate to the Indigenous Literacy Foundation. I donate to local cafes. You'll find that your local cafes will often have books for young people to read in their pile of reading material, and I like to go through those and suggest that they could cull their own cafe reading material with and
put some new ones in.
So I do that with some of my local cafes. So make piles, keep, donate, and discard piles. And then have a look at your piles and ask yourself, have I read this book? Am I likely to read this book, or will I read it again? Sometimes we buy books because we think we should read them. I do that with the Booker every year. I buy the Booker Prize winners. And then about 2 years later, I think, am I likely to read this? No, I am not.
No.
And then I donate them usually to my mother. So who is more likely to read the Booker Prize winners in her book club? So you need to really think about, are you likely to read a book that you haven't read before, or are you likely to read it again? Does the book hold special significance or memories? Are those memories that you need to keep in book form? Do your kids feel the same about those books? I was really surprised when we were packing about which books my kids wanted to keep and which they were totally happy to discard. Some that I thought were must keeps because I had read them 55 million times. The dinosaur that grew into a plant one, for example, the dinosaur seeds. You know, my smallest child doesn't remember reading that book with me. And she was like, I don't care. I'm totally happy to discard that one. Whereas other books they had very, very fond memories of. So talk to your kids about which books they want to keep. I have from my own childhood two books. I've got The Duck and the Snow and Little Cloud and Me Mountain. And those books shall remain with me always because I have very, very fond memories of them. And I also stole them from my siblings to keep them in my own house. But, you know, have a think about, do you really need to keep them in book form? Is the information in the nonfiction book still relevant and up to date? Do you have multiple copies or editions of the same book, even if you are an author of your own books? So my eldest daughter was helping me cull, and as we were going through Raising Readers, I heard all of the different language editions of the book, and I had three copies of each of the language editions. And she said, you only need to keep one. And I was like, oh, no, I need to keep all of them. And she's like, nope, you only need to keep one. So, you know, I got some of my my tips fed back to myself, and we have now donated those on to other libraries. Donate thoughtfully of your books. Donate books to school libraries which are in good condition only and suitable for the recipient. If they are not in good condition, then I'm really sorry, the only place for them is the bin. If a book has book mold on it, if it has sort of mold around the edges, or it's got it's incredibly dusty and it's unlikely to be read, it's only suitable to be recycled. It really, really is. We do not want or need books ending up in landfill, but we likewise do not want books being sent over to countries which we decide may need our books if they're not in good condition. So please only donate books which are in good condition. And then if you are packing up books either to donate or to move, sort the books by size and weight and pack the heavier and larger books at the bottom of the boxes. Use sturdy but small boxes. It's very tempting to put a lot of books into a huge box.
And then you can't move the box.
Some of the heaviest boxes I've ever touched in my life have been those which have books in them. So if you're privileged enough to be getting proper packing boxes, which can I say I was not, choose the small but sturdy ones. You can get double-walled cardboard boxes to prevent them from breaking during the move. Books are incredibly heavy. Wrap up fragile or valuable books. So I've wrapped my childhood books in bubble wrap or some of them in tissue paper just because they're quite old now. You can pack books vertically or to minimize stress on the spines, and you can fill empty spaces in the box with packing paper or bubble wrap to prevent shifting during transit, because books actually do get damaged quite a bit just sitting in a box, and then label the boxes. So I've labeled all of my boxes with whoever's room it's going into or into my study, and it just makes unpacking so much more straightforward. And of course, store your books in a place which is protected from extreme temperatures and humidity. I reside in Brisbane, and let me tell you, the books have been kept inside the house until they were moved into storage because it is just so humid here, and we have a massive problem with book mold in Queensland, and the humidity just does terrible things to books. So make sure you store them in a temperature-controlled environment if you can. They are my tips on culling your home book collection.
Those are excellent tips. And do you know what I'm going to do for you, Megan Daly?
What?
I'm going to compile all of that into a lovely post for our newsletter.
I'm glad you thought it was useful, yes. And you're doing that.
I'm going to do it for you. I'm just going to transcribe the whole thing, and then we're going to have something so that all the people out there who are listening thinking, oh, I'm trying to take notes, let me tell you, I'm going to do it for you. So, because I was also taking notes.
Yeah, that's funny.
So apart from doing that, what am I going to be doing? I'm going to be just sort of, you know, finishing. I told you I was working on two books at the same time.
You did.
Very unusually. Yes. So I'm just forging ahead. One is hard and one is fun. And so I am making myself do the hard stuff
before the fun.
And then I'm alternating from day to day, and then I get to have just the fun, which is, you know, which is good. The fun will get hard. I'm going to get to the point where the fun is hard because, you know, I'm just like at the moment rollicking along, making it up as I go along. And I will get to a point where that's going to come to a shuddering halt. But for the time being, I'm just going to go with that. What about you? What are you up to?
Look, I am preparing for launches of The Beehive, which has been enormous fun. There's a Brisbane book launch at Bright and Early Books in Ascot. And there's also, very excitingly, a Sydney book launch on Sunday the 25th. And it's going to be with illustrator Max Hamilton, which is incredibly exciting because Max lives in Sydney. I live in Brisbane, but we are both going to be in Sydney on that weekend. The reason I am in Sydney, can I just say, is not book related. I feel like half of Australia will be in Sydney that weekend because it is the Tay-Tay weekend. So my children are off to the Taylor Swift concert. Outfits have been sourced. Bags are actually packed. And I will be in the car park with all of the mothers who did not get a ticket and with Alison Tate.
You'll be in the car park with me and my sister. We are coming to your rescue with wine and nibbles, and we are very much looking forward to it. We will also be attending your book launch, which is at Glee Books, and which we will put the link for tickets because you need to make a booking in the show notes just so that, you know, they know how many thousands are coming. Obviously, everyone will just be coming from the Taylor Swift concert to the Megan Daly book launch because that seems to be the way it's going to go. But I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So where will we find you? And, you know, until we meet again and can discuss further details about all
this. Yeah, you will find me at megandaly.com.au and you'll find me at Megan Daly Books on Facebook and Instagram.
And you will find me at alisontait.com, AllisonTait, and you will find me on Facebook and Instagram at Alison Tait Writer. And we very much look forward to, you know, being with you again in your company next time.
See you later.